A lot of people listening this morning shouldn't be listening to the programme because they should be at work, and they aren't at work because they can't find work. And there's a whole heap of people of a generation who would love to be at work rather than sitting at home, and their friends going, well, you can just get the dole and it's kind of nice to have time off. And they're doing their nut because they're qualified or they're clever or they're able or they're willing, and all they want to do is engage their brain and have a job, but they can't because it's just not there. Now, hopefully, things are on the move and on the mend and that things are getting better. But in the meantime, it's no harm to have a closer look at what happens when somebody goes on the dole and actually writes about it. The physicality of going to the dole office, the signing on, the attempts to sign on, and then what to do with your day when you've collected the dole. Thankfully, Tobias Kirchner has written such a book. It's called The Dole Diaries. He joins us on the line now. Good morning, Tobias.
Oh, good morning.
It's very, very good to talk to you. Why did you go down this road to write a book, The Dole?
Well, it seemed like there was a need for it. You know, there was a hell of a lack that no such book existed before.
Yeah.
You know, there needed to be a book like this because, as experiences go, this experience, The Dole, is probably the commonest in the country. You know, there's more people on The Dole than there are doctors or nurses or waitresses or anything at all like that.
Yeah.
You know? And in these days of fragmentation, what we need is shared experience and something to unite us.
Yes. So you've been 10 years abroad, working, doing what sort of jobs?
There's a few things I want to remain universal.
Yeah.
With this book, you know, because it's easier to identify with the character if you don't, put him in certain boxes of race or family status or profession or age or, you know,
yeah,
all these sorts of things. So, you know.
But what's that got to do with you, though?
Sorry?
What's that got to do? I'm talking about you, not the character. Did you spend 10 years working abroad?
I did, as the book is, non-fiction, so it is about me.
Yeah.
I was teaching, actually, abroad.
Okay, so you're doing your teaching, and in fact, you were in Syria until not too long ago, weren't you?
That's right, yeah, I was there for the outbreak of the hostilities in Homs, and was the last, one of three last Westerners evacuated out of it before the serious battle got underway.
Right, and is that what brought you home then?
Kind of, yeah. It certainly put a different perspective on things, you know.
So, having been 10 years away, you would have probably left then Celtic Tiger-y times and then missed the recession as such and have just arrived back at what we hope is the tail end of the recession. What were you struck by when you landed back in Ireland?
To be honest, things seemed a hell of a lot kind of nicer than during the boom because, you know, I'd come back maybe once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. During those Celtic Tiger years, and it was kind of appalling, frankly, you know, to sort of see little snapshots year by year of how everybody had become practically demented.
Right.
You know, there was a real kind of aggression in the country and all that. Whereas now, I don't know, does misery suit us better or something? But, you know, the atmosphere just seems a bit more relaxed and the way it should be and the way it used to be.
So when you came back then to settle back, what was the plan?
The plan was to do a doctorate, but then I sort of, the plan is to do a doctorate and, you know, get work to support myself. But until that sort of came together, I needed it all, you know. And I thought maybe if a newspaper or something might be interested in just a few columns or something on the experience of applying for dole, seeing as it was such a topical and, you know, universal thing nearly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that sort of just snowballed because it became a hell of a lot more fun than what I was supposed to be doing.
So what was just in terms of the practicalities of signing on and things like that, was it easy to get yourself on the live register?
No, Jesus, it wasn't. And that was the big surprise. That's why the thing turned out from not being just a few columns in the newspaper to being a book.
Yeah.
A proper one, because, Jesus, no, it's not at all as easy as it's made out to be. It's actually a hell of a struggle, you know. It involves courage and determination and cunning and all sorts of things to finally get your name on that live register.
Well, talk me through it a little bit. Why does it take such a mammoth amount of work?
I was told at one point it can take up to 7 months.
Right.
In my position, and you know, when you're talking about life and death, which is what this is.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a long time to be expected to fend for thyself. You know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's that was one of the surprising things.
So I mean, what did you? What was the nature of the struggle to get your name on the register?
Well, for me, it was possibly a little different to others because I needed to satisfy the habitual residence condition, which is, you know, there are all these little sort of phrases that you've never heard of before, and
yeah.
You don't frankly know. Nobody really takes you by the hand and walks you through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the habitual residence condition. If you haven't, even though you're from here, that doesn't entitle you to anything. You have to sort of prove that that this has been your center of interest over the years, and that remains a very vague term, and there is no definition of it, actually,
right,
in law, really. And,
yeah.
You know, it could be anything from 3 months, like I said, to up to 7 months.
So you eventually have to prove that you have some class of roots in the country, is it?
Yeah, and it's up to somebody within the system to determine when you've satisfied that condition. You know, it's all very Kafkaesque, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And when they eventually said, "Okay, we're happy with your habitual residence," is that the biggest hoop that you have to jump through, or was there more to come?
Well, yeah, I guess that was the biggest hoop that you need to jump through. But there was also the interaction between. It's not just the Department of Social Protection; it's also the Department of Health. And it's kind of funny because the Department of Health oversee the literally life or death aspect to it. When the Department of Social Protection has told you, look, at you're in administrative limbo, basically, you are at risk of starving to death. That's a medical issue. That's not a social issue for us. So, you know, they sort of toss you into the community welfare officer. And, you know, like I said, it's this sort of this system of anonymity. And, you know,
yeah.
Then there's sort of emergency welfare payment that sustains you, you know, while you're at risk of starving to death before you
and
satisfy the residence condition and all that.
So what will they give you for an emergency payment per week?
It's the same as the dole itself, 188. But, you know, when you hear the name community welfare officer and you hear that it's an emergency payment, they don't tell you how long it's going to take you, and you think, Jesus, that's like the end of the world. I couldn't go there because what if I'm turned down? You know, that would be even worse than applying for it in the first place, you know. So, you know, you don't know what the hell to do.
So when you eventually got signed up to the live register, you had to join, I presume you had to, is it still the same, you have to join the queue and, you know, head down to the social welfare office? It's all of that routine?
Yeah, and that happens once a month, but the Department of Social Protection follows the lunar calendar, more so than the solar calendar.
Okay.
Because they get you to sign on at exact 4 week intervals. Which is more like the lunar cycle than the solar cycle.
Yeah.
Funny. But yeah, it involves, and sometimes when you see the size of that crowd, you're just, you know, you're saying, oh my God, we're doomed. We're never going to get anywhere. This is, you know, it's all going to implode. But in fairness to the staff, they're, you know, their professionalism is huge, and they knew this all along, and it all seems to work and make sense.
How did it feel joining the queue?
Well, I guess there's a bit of a kind of a stigma. You know, you feel conflicted on one half. You know, your ego is there thinking that you're so much better than all this. You know, that you want so much more. You're an aspirational human being and blah, blah, blah. But then your id is kind of thankful that you've got what you have got. You know, you've got a nice roof. You've got hot water for a bath. You've got plenty of food. You know, all this. So you do feel kind of conflicted in that.
So you're constantly having a sort of comparative analysis. You know, you're not living in a refugee camp in Syria, you know.
Sure,
you're thinking all of the worst things that could happen to you that rather than being on the dole. But I would imagine you were not the only person thinking that way in that queue.
No, not at all. Everybody's face looks fairly careworn and introspective in it, you know.
So when you got your money on a given week, let's take the first couple of weeks then. Where did it go? 188 euro isn't going to go very far in a given week. So how did it divvy up for you?
Well, unless you've got a talent for monastic orders, you know, it won't go very far. And, you know, this sort of media portrayal that we're all booze hounds. Like, I know that Lidl and Aldi are selling it cheap or whatever, but, you know, if you won't get very far in 188 week, you know, in a bar. So how do you, divvying it up is, you know, most of it goes on rent and this and that. But thankfully, Tesco and Dunn Stores sell nearly gone off food for basically free. So,
and have you become quite an expert at finding that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Tesco used to do like 90% off at 8 p.m., but then they changed that golden era, and now it's just like 50% at 12 o'clock in the day. And, you know, it becomes like a full-time job in itself.
I was going to say, your life timetable sounds like it, you know, it revolves around survival.
Sure, yeah. It becomes a full-time job. You don't want to become extinct, you know, and you would be if you stayed not moving for long enough, you know.
You talk about stigma. What about your friends and family? Did you discuss being on the dole with them? Are they in the same boat? Did you find that your contemporaries were moving in very different circles, and this was a little tougher for you to have to countenance?
No, actually, most of them are in the same boat.
Really?
To be honest with you. So you know, amongst ourselves, there's no stigma. It's kind of you laugh ruefully at it, you know, bit of a chuckle, and, you know, you get on with it. But as regards strangers, like, it's kind of a, you know, you do feel a bit kind of stigmatized. Like, you know, one of the things why I published this book was to explain the gap in my CV, so to speak, trying to glamorize this period to say, that, you know, no, I was doing something. I wasn't in prison or a loony bin.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, not to denigrate those places. I'm sure there, you know, many a fine person has spent a long time in them.
Yeah. But it's funny that you should equate the dole, not quite equate, but bring them into the same sentence as a mental hospital or a prison.
Mm-hmm.
That you think that there is that sort of slur, if you like, on it.
Sure, well, we're at the extremities of society, you know, which is, it's to be expected, I suppose. You know, but even like the stigma of some cinemas do, like, a discount for unemployed people, like, you know, Fiverr and all that. And I've never, not that I go to the cinema much, but I've never applied for it because I'd be too ashamed. Also been curious as to how they determine if you're unemployed. Do they just assume that somebody who's hard up enough that they're going to say they're unemployed, you know?
Do you not carry some class of claim card that suggests that you are indeed?
But it's the same card for everyone. Everybody gets issued that.
Yeah.
Card, you know, that white one with the blue insignia with the pigeon in it.
You said you'd be ashamed. Why would you use that word?
Because I suppose there is literally this feeling of being less than equal member of society, you know. This is, I suppose, it's your self-worth as well being expressed.
And how has your self-worth survived this experience?
Well, all right. I suppose because I had the book to be fiddling around with and playing with. So, you know, a lot of it doesn't, you know, you do need something to fill your days with.
Have you met a lot of people who are in the same boat as you in the sense that they are, for want of a better, but maybe educated, well-travelled, ready to go, job ready? I mean, the same people, whether you're a plumber, or a carpenter, or a teacher, or anything else, but just find themselves just stuck?
Like, everybody tends to keep to themselves very much, you know, in the standing on queue. You don't want to offend people or make too much eye contact or, you know, this kind of thing, or to be staring at people. So, you know, my circle of acquaintances hasn't really expanded in that direction, but I can say, like I said, it's quite a number of friends are in a similar position. So
you bumped into Enda Kenny at some stage?
I did, yeah. This was on a drive through Limerick last week. My friend Niall Dempsey was driving, and he has a habit of keeping his eyes more on the
side of the street.
Talent spotting.
Oh, a rubbernecker.
And, you know, and, and of course he spotted the biggest talent of all, Enda Kenny.
Depending on your politics, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we screeched a big U-turn into him and this guy with the earpiece, and, you know, security details started looking very nervous because I was dressed more or less like a paramilitary nearly, and I came tumbling out of the car shouting, "President Kenny, President Kenny," because I'd lost my marbles. he was a very affable man, very, very charming, affable chap, and, you know, I have a tremendous respect for him and for John Burton and for everything that they've accomplished, really, you know.
Right, okay. Well, they'll be very thrilled to hear that, given what you've just been talking about. Did you give him a copy of your book, by the way?
I did.
Oh, good, okay.
I hope he enjoys it. But, you know, like it's reasonable to think that icebergs and ships have been encountering each other for a very long time. And, you know, there have been many encounters, no doubt, where a huge catastrophe was only narrowly averted by the, you know, lightning reflexes and skill of the captain involved. But none of us know the name of those captains of those ships, you know, whereas we all, you know, we all know the name where the ship where it didn't happen. So, you know, you never get the credit for the crisis that you avert. And I think that's kind of where Enda Kenny and John Burton, these ones are now. You know, there was a huge catastrophe facing us a few years ago, and they did avert it. You know, we were facing food riots and rolling blackouts and, you know, all this kind of stuff, and that never came to pass.
Well, the book is called The Dole Diaries, Days in the Life of One of the Most Vulnerable Members of Society. Tobias, thanks for your time this morning. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Take care of yourself. Good luck with everything.
Bye-bye.
That's Tobias Kirchner on the line there. You can buy that book in Dubray shops in Dublin and Galway and Kilkenny and Vibes and Scribes there in Cork and Just Books in Mullingar and O'Mahony's in the Midwest and on their website and Amazon and Facebook, the usual spots really. But that's Tobias Kirchner on his book, The Dole Diaries. I think it probably give people, it's described as darkly comic, so you probably get a feel for it in that way as a bit of a life on that road, as I'm sure many of you are there. 51552 is the text number, the email tubs@rte.ie. Okay, Sinead O'Brien, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Not too bad.
Good, good. We were talking a little bit earlier on about the dole. I don't think it's called the dole anymore, though, is it? It's called Job Seekers Allowance, I think they call it now, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us your story.
Well, I'm, say, just past my mid-30s, and I was listening to, obviously, the interview earlier with Tobias Kirchner about his book, and it kind of highlighted a lot of factors for me, how I could relate to him, because I've been on and off the dole for, I'd say, since I finished my disastrously first round of college from 1996 to 1998.
Yeah.
And I went through massive different jobs during the 2000s. And between each job, I, you know, fell back on the dole, and it was a constant cushion for me there. And I was lucky to have it and to be able to take advantage of it. I worked for Irish Nationwide for, I think, 5 years. Different jobs, you know, it's not that I didn't want to work. It's just that I didn't find my niche, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, anyway, I was out of work just at the turn of the recession in 2008, and I emigrated. And Tobias Kirchner, I ended up teaching in South Korea.
Oh.
And from that, I kind of decided to come home and finish my degree, and I've spent the last 4 years. I got my honours degree in biochemistry. I've done the HDEP, and this day next week, my thesis for my master's is due in. So now I'm worrying about, will I get a job? I don't think so. There are no jobs in teaching. There aren't very many in industry that I'd be qualified for. So I think I'm looking at the dole queue, and hopefully, you know, I'll get it and, you know, have that support while I'm looking for work. But it's not a nice concept after working so hard for the past 4 years to try and get the qualifications to get into work, whereas I don't think it's very difficult to get that work. The jobs aren't there, you know.
You're not work shy, clearly, and you've done all the little jobs that you needed to do to keep you going, and then you're trying to better yourself in terms of your education and your degree in biochemistry. I thought it was all about science, and that they were trying to encourage people to get jobs in science or biology, whatever it might be, because that's where the work was.
Yeah, I've spent, like last week, I started looking at jobs again. It's very difficult to be doing two, to be writing up a thesis and looking for work, you know.
Of course.
But I start, you know, worrying, and there are very few jobs that don't look for at least 3 years industry experience. And then for the teaching jobs, there are thousands of teachers out there looking for the maternity, you know, leave cover or whatever. So it's not a very, you know, doesn't paint a very pretty picture for my next year trying to get jobs in the field that I'm now qualified for. It's not as easy as, you know, as they say, you know, go into the science area, the jobs are there, where truthfully a lot of it is in, you know, say the management side of it, human resources, quality, that kind of thing. But for actually the lab work, you know, it's a lot of experience, and at this stage I think a PhD is required, you know. It's a tough slog.
Would you consider going abroad?
I have to, you know. I at this stage of my life, I, you know, it's not really an option for me anymore to be on the dole. I know the cushion is there, and if I was fortunate enough to get it, you know, that'd be great. But to be honest, I'm sick of, you know, living on very, very little means. And, you know, as I think Tobias must write about in the book, the bargain buckets, you know, the possibly gone off, you know, for food, that's going off very shortly.
That's your story too, obviously.
I'm kind of, you know, I want more. I've worked hard enough.
Yeah, you deserve a little more than checking out the bargain bin
more
for food for Tuesday night's dinner.
Yeah, and, you know, to be able to buy a dress or something at full cost and not at 70% discount.
You know,
just to be able to go out and spoil yourself a little bit, you know. I will go out and spoil myself, and I think I'll get this book.
Good. I'd say you're probably as adept and as skilled in the world of biochemistry as you are in bargain hunting.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. It's you know, it's tough out there. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, it's better to get, you know, it's nicer to be able to get, pick up your food at a, you know, a lot cheaper price than the full price, and know that, you know, this is in the fridge and you don't have to worry.
Do people ever get sniffy with you for collecting the dole and say, look at you with your degrees and your education, and what are you doing living off people who are, you know, do you ever get that?
Oh, yeah, like some people, they would think, Jesus, you know, you have these qualifications, you know, why are you even considering the dole? And I think there's it's not propaganda, but there is such a push for people to go into the sciences, and that these jobs are there, whereas truly, I don't think they are for newly, you know, say a graduate, fresh out of college. It's not that easy to get into them, and, you know, people, I think they do, you know, well, I know some of my friends anyway, they kind of wonder if why I'm even thinking down that road, where, you know, it's kind of thought that I should be able to walk straight into a position. And
what are you doing today?
I'm in the college and I'm writing up the discussion for my thesis.
Okay, so you've still got that academic pursuit to indulge in, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but that keeps you going, keeps you on the road, gives you a raison d'etre, as it were.
Raise
debts too, as well as a raise on debt. Yeah, of course, the combination of the two, unfortunately. Good luck with everything. I've got to say goodbye, Sinead. Apologies for being so hasty, but we're ending the show now. But it's very good to talk to you, and I hope it all goes well. Keep in touch with us. Drop us a mail maybe sometime. Let us know how you get on, will you?
Okay, I will do. Thank you very much.
Look after yourself.
All right, bye.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.